Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to this special edition of the Strang Report podcast. Today, my guest is one of my favorite people in the whole world. It's Doug Weed, who's widely known for his many books and also his involvement in the political process going back, well, a long way. We'll talk about it. And, you know, with everything going in our country and with President Biden being inaugurated recently, there are an awful lot of Christians, well, really, there's a lot of conservatives, too, that are wondering what in the world is going on. And I'm hoping that we will bring some clarity today in our discussion with Doug Weed. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm so honored, Doug, to have you on my podcast. I've done a few with you, even did one with your daughter. Your podcast always do great. Of course, people see you on Lou Dobbs and other shows. I know around the time of the inauguration, you had a lot of interviews, and I appreciate you fitting me in, and hopefully you can help us get some of that kind of clarity that I was talking about.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Well, I was thinking about you. You know, it's no surprise to you. Some of my listeners don't know how much respect I've had for you over the years. In fact, I was thinking that you were probably the first person that I knew personally who was really involved in politics. And, you know, you started out, how would you say it, as an evangelist? That's how I first knew you. You came to our church to minister, and I was still in high school at the time, and over time, you know, I got acquainted with you. And the next thing I knew, that you were holding these charity fundraisers, and you even held some in the White House. I just think that's such a fascinating story of how you got started in that, and then one thing led to another, and you became friends with George H.W. Bush and were actually a part of his administration. So since we have a lot to cover, maybe you could just briefly explain how the Lord opened those doors for you.
It's not an easy explanation, but I was involved in charitable work because I read through the Bible, and I read it in its entire context three times in a row, and I wondered what was missing from my life that was in there. And what was clearly missing was God's attitude toward the poor. And I thought, well, I don't have that working for me. I better get going. So that was the big scriptural missing piece for me back then. This is back before all your listeners were born.
You're probably right.
So I started getting involved in helping the poor, and that ended up leading me into meeting political figures.
You know, I've written a little bit about this in one of my books, which is how I happen to know some of the story, but you went over to Cambodia. This would have been not long after Vietnam fell, and of course, the Khmer Rouge, is that how you say their name? And it was just the killing fields, and it was just so horrible. You went over there. Why did you go over, and what happened when you got back?
Well, I had written a book called The Compassionate Touch, and it was, I'll back up a little bit. After reading through the Bible and being moved by how frequently through the hundreds and thousands of years God had this tenderness towards the poor, I decided I was going to take a trip around the world to the poorest locations in the world, displaced persons camps in Africa and wherever there was famine. And I traveled with a Catholic priest from South Dakota with a couple of close friends and pastors. And off and on, we traveled to these locations. And one of them was Calcutta, India. And that's where I met Mark Bontaine. And he was he was a hot evangelical missionary who also was reaching out to the poor. And I found that just fascinating. And so I wrote a book about him. And that shortly after, a few years later, I hired a young man named Hal Donaldson. And he was deeply impressed with Mark Buntain and the work he did. And so after my book, he wrote a book about him too. And he started Convoy of Hope. And
which is huge so, now and has helped so many people. And of course, he and I are fairly good friends. And he credits you with, you know, kind of helping him get started and opening his eyes to the needs that are out there.
Yeah, well, I hired him, and he really helped me. He and his brother, Dave, who now started CityServe, so they were pretty talented people. So that's what got me started. That got the book written, Compassionate Touch. And then when the Cambodian famine hit that you just mentioned, I saw this on the news, and I knew from experience how tragic this was going to be. The Compassionate Touch was little bios of an orphan, a leper, a beggar, a prostitute, people from the street of Calcutta and their stories. So it personalized the tragedy. And when the Cambodian famine hit, I knew how that was going to affect individual lives, and I wanted to do what I could to help. So I went over there, and in the process, the Carters found out about it, the Reagans found out about it, and that led to the Charity Awards dinner. So, long story, but that's how it happened.
And then Pat Robertson ran for president in 1988, and he did pretty well in the first couple primaries, and George H.W. Bush was running. He was, you know, vice president, of course, under Ronald Reagan. And, you know, I know the story well enough to know that the Bushes, being proper Episcopalians, knew very little about all these people that were supporting Pat Robertson. And so how was it that they turned to you, because you were able to give them a lot of advice?
Well, that was, you know, at that time I was involved in what later became known as Crossover, and it was applied to music. Amy Grant, for example, would try to do a song and create some music that would appeal to Christians and sometimes have insider messages to Christians, but would be popular with the wider public, and that was called Crossover. Well, I did that with books, and I did it and politically. So the Bushes didn't know I was a born-again Christian, and I was working with them and helping them. And one day we were sitting in his office with Peter Thiele, who later became ambassador to Canada, and he was his press secretary at the time. He said, and the vice president said, "Well, I got to leave you guys. I'm sorry. I got to go speak to the National Religious Broadcasters." And Pete Thiele said, "Well, Mr. Vice President, Doug here is a born-again Christian." And he was just shocked. He said, "You are?" I said, "Yes." He sat back down. He said, "You're a born-again Christian?" I said, "Yes, you got a lot of them around you. Susie Baker, James Baker's wife, is a born-again Christian, a Catholic Pentecostal." He said, "Susie Baker?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, are you doing anything right now?" I said, "No." He said, "Come with me. Go with me over to this religious broadcasters." So I went in his limo in the motorcade with the vice president, and that began a relationship and a friendship. And I helped advise him on how to build a relationship with evangelicals. And it upset Pat Robertson when he heard about it, because it helped give George H.W. Bush polish in his relationship with evangelicals. But I felt I was led of the Lord to do it, and it led to a relationship with the Bush family for almost 40 years, and it produced two presidents, so it was good that somebody was in there.
Yeah, you were a real trailblazer. And in my last book that I wrote, I had a whole chapter on evangelicals in Washington before Trump. And you had some really interesting stories. People need to read the book to hear some of the stories. But some of the bias, you know, religious bias, you know, the deep state was around back then. We didn't call it that, and it probably wasn't as deep as it is now. And I remember that you opened a lot of doors for evangelicals. One time in particular, you brought a whole group of Christian publishers. The Christian Bookseller Association was in Washington when George H.W. Bush was vice president, and it was a very nice reception at his home. Yeah, a lot of people were there. It was a real who's who. I mean, even as I recall, Jerry Falwell was there and Tammy Faye Baker. This was before, you know, the big scandals that happened just a year or two later. And George Bush got a lot of support from the Christian community when he ran in 1988. And shall I say that you were rewarded with a position in the White House? It was a pretty good position, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was on senior staff, a special assistant to the president, and handled coalitions. Of course, the evangelicals thought I was the evangelical liaison. Actually, that was someone who worked for me. And I was a liaison to conservative groups and law enforcement groups and veterans and all religious groups. And so it was a very interesting experience. I don't know if reward is the way to put it, because the White House is a real snake pit, believe me. It's quite an experience.
And there's so many more stories that we could tell, but you know, at some point you left the Bush administration right before the Kuwait war. I remember that very well. We'll have to talk about that story sometime. And then you've been involved in a lot of other things, even some other campaigns, and written a lot of books, and kind of become a historian, and kind of about the presidents and their children and so forth. I've been just fascinated. I've read several of your books. The most recent one was sort of the authorized book by the Trumps about sort of their view of his first couple of years in office. And I read another book that you wrote about the election of 2016. I remember a scene in which Hillary Clinton was throwing cake across the room and other things. I was thinking, where in the world did Doug get all this detail? It was fascinating reading. And, you know, you've become quite respected. Lou Dobbs has you on regularly, you know, as I mentioned earlier. And so, you know, you have a very interesting vantage point, much more interesting than we've been able to delve into, you know, in this short podcast. But now we have a new president. You know, the evangelical community was very, very strongly for President Trump. An awful lot of people are very disappointed that he's out of office. I personally believe that he won and that it was stolen. I mean, the evidence to me just seems overwhelming. But regardless, Joe Biden is now our president and we have a whole new reality. So I'd like you to just opine about what you think is going on in the early part of 2021 with the new president in power.
Well, I agree with you. The instincts of the American people are that something was wrong. It's hard to know because we can't trust the media. I mean, the media says there was no fraud in the election. Trust us. But this is the same media that said Joe Biden was going to win by 15 percentage points. And for 3 years, they insisted on this ridiculous theory that Donald Trump is a Russian spy. So these are the people, they still haven't apologized for that. No one in the media, the New York Times hasn't returned their Pulitzer Prize for having discovered that the Russian recruited Donald Trump and had him run for president. They don't explain why he immediately increased the sanctions on Russian oligarchs and why he improved and modernized America's nuclear deterrent, why he increased defense funding, why he gave the Ukrainian army tank-piercing shells while Obama gave them pillowcases and blankets. And they just haven't explained why he rebuilt NATO and raised $900 billion to strengthen NATO to make it far stronger than it had ever been before. But so there are countries in the world who outlaw mail-in ballots because they're so subject to fraud. France, my wife is French. She comes from a country that outlaws mail-in ballots. And England allows it, but all the other great countries of Europe do not allow it because of fraud. Italy, there's a long list. None of the Latin American countries allow it. They did at times, and there was overwhelming fraud. So this is America's first experience, like a Latin American country, in allowing it. And it was troubling to me that the president-elect, I gave him every benefit of the doubt, his first speech to the country calling for unity was to attack his predecessor. I thought, whoa, wait, you won the election. Why? Let go of that bone. Give us your future, your vision for the future. Don't attack Donald Trump. That's over. Why are you doing that? And attract his supporters. He said, we can't call them protesters. Don't let anyone tell me these are protesters. They're terrorists. So you start off by calling half the country terrorists. I thought that was a real missed opportunity at trying to unite the country, and made me all the more suspicious. If you won the election, why are you complaining? If you didn't win the election, you committed fraud, I can understand why you'd be very nervous about anybody asking questions. But that's my feeling. That's how I feel.
And that's why we're talking, to find out how you feel. But, you know, there's so many things going on, including in the wider culture, where, you know, big tech is censoring conservative voices of all kinds, including Christians. Forbes just came out with a list, apparently, of people that worked in the Trump administration with the idea that corporations would be blackballed, I hope I'm saying this right, if they hired any of them. I mean, this is just beyond belief, in my opinion. I mean, there's always been political animosity and one side putting down the other side. But, you know, this is, in my opinion, worse than McCarthyism ever was. And it's like, if you don't go with their socially, politically correct philosophy, that you are a non-entity. Katie Couric said that Trump supporters needed to be reprogrammed. I mean, what does that mean? So what do you think is going to happen, particularly with Christian people? You know, during the whole COVID thing, we saw an awful lot of governors. They were entirely Democrat-controlled states where they really cracked down on the church. We didn't see that much here in Florida, except that Rodney Howard Brown down in Tampa was arrested, and his crime was holding a church service. And I've been told by Matt Staver that he was the first pastor in American history arrested for holding a church service. Undoubtedly, there were some, you know, bad apples in there over the years that were arrested for something else, but not for, you know, exercising religious freedom. Now, the state of Florida and the Hillsborough County Commission fell all over themselves to try to unscramble that egg within a day or two. But in a lot of places like California and different places, New York State, you know, they didn't even allow Jewish funerals and all kinds of things. Where do you think all this is going? And are Christians experiencing a new type of persecution?
They are. I mean, the good news is they've survived all through history with this. The early church, you know, Christians were used as flaming torches in Nero's garden. Yes, where it's headed. I hope that's not where it's headed. But the church has survived. I mean, the underground church in Rome, as they moved through the catacombs, that's where Maranatha came from. That was their code word, Maranatha. you know, he is risen, so that you knew it was a Christian around that dark corner that you were meeting with. And Christians survived in the Soviet Union. The Russian Orthodox Church was compromised by the KGB. I imagine that sort of thing will happen. Some of your listeners may think that's far-fetched, but I'll give you an example. First, let me say the heads of the Russian Orthodox Church we know today were members of the KGB, and they were recruited by the KGB and empowered, and the elections inside the church and the decisions inside the church were run by the KGB. And yet people had genuine experiences with God. I've got on my bookshelf here a book of a Russian spy for America, for Great Britain. He was assigned to the Soviet embassy in England, and he converted to Christianity, and he converted because of Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach. He loved Bach's music, and Bach's music was forbidden in the Soviet Union because Bach was considered a Christian, and his music glorified God, and so Bach was not allowed. This guy, British guy, became a Christian, and he revealed much of the inside of how the Soviet Union ran the church, the KGB ran the church. So I imagine we're in store for that. The reason I think we may be in store for that is, you remember all the excitement over Hillary Clinton's emails? And even today, there's discussion about the emails and the reason they were trying to change the subject. The Steele dossier was meant as an attempt to divert attention away from her emails. You never hear anybody talk about what was in those emails. You hear about Snowden and Assange and free speech, and should we allow them? And they had access to her emails. What a terrible thing. But what was so terrible about having access to Hillary Clinton's emails? That there was nothing bad in them. And the truth is, your listeners can Google this and look it up. There were some very incriminating emails. One of them was a discussion about among staffers with Hillary Clinton about how to co-opt the Catholic Church. What they wanted to do was create what they called, if you read Hillary's campaign chairman, John Podesta's email, what they called a Catholic Spring. You'll remember the Arab Spring, when these countries, Egypt and Morocco and Libya, they threw off their dictators and they threw off their leaders in an attempt to embrace democracy, although some of them became terrorist states in the process. But the idea was, this Arab Spring was a fresh breath of fresh air, and new democratic reforms would sweep the Arab world. Well, in those emails, the Hillary Clinton campaign used the same terms, and they referred to a Catholic Spring. And that refers to the whole plan to infiltrate the Catholic Church and to empower people inside the Catholic Church who had different views on abortion and different views on these doctrines. So I was just saying, it's one thing to hear these media people complain about church people becoming active in politics. How dare they, separation of church and state. But it turns out some of the political leaders were planning on getting active in the church, infiltrating the church, changing its doctrines. And you asked her originally, where's this going? Well, that's one place it will go eventually. That's what it did in the Soviet Union. You had the KGB running the Russian Orthodox Church. And so you have figures, Beth Moore, and figures like the editor of Christianity Today, who are wonderful Christian people who are somewhat sympathetic to the other side, maybe with good reasons, and justified by mistakes made by the the more conservative side. But eventually, if you ask where we're headed for a compromised church, and there will probably be an underground church and an approved church.
Wow. To think that could happen in America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where, you know, our religious freedom was enshrined in the very First Amendment. So as we wrap up the podcast, I'll of course give you the last word, but maybe you could tell the listeners, whether they're believers or there's probably people that aren't believers that listen, what are steps ahead? What attitude should an individual have? What can a person do with all of these changes that are going on?
Well, I think they should become politically active. I think that's a spiritual imperative. I had a long conversation once with Bill Hybels. He came to Washington. He was not involved in government or politics in any way. And Rich DeVos took him out to dinner with me and a couple other people. And as we sat at the table, he later became quite involved politically. As we sit at the table, I was working at the White House, and he said, well, why should Christians be involved in politics? Our kingdom is not of this world, yada, yada, yada. And I said, well, the first five books of the Bible are written by a head of state, Moses, and the last book in the Bible describes God judging the nations. What are you going to do when God judges the nations? You're going to say to God, well, I'm not part of this world. My kingdom isn't, you know, I'm part of a heavenly kingdom. What are you going to say when you stand before him? You are also an American. And as a good steward, you have to account for all the gifts God has given you. And one of those gifts is a vote. What does it mean to be free? What's the difference between a cab driver in Moscow during the Cold War and a cab driver in Washington, D.C.? And there's really basic freedoms that you have in America: the freedom to vote, the freedom to petition government. Have you written a letter to your congressman or your senator? That's what makes you free. That's the only thing that makes you different from somebody living in a dictatorship, is you have the freedom to vote, the freedom to run for office, freedom to petition government, the freedom of speech, you know, what you write in a book. Those are the basic freedoms, some of which we're talking about losing. So as a good steward, you need to definitely be involved. If you go down with the ship, you know, you can't control what happens, but you can control what you say and what you do. And you need to speak up.
Very well said, and I think that's a good place to leave it. You know, thank you for your service to America. Thank you for standing for godly principles, for defending the Christian community in ways that we didn't really go into, but I know you well enough to know some stories about how even you influenced legislation with the Americans for Disabilities Act was going to include churches, and you made an argument that church camps and different things really ought to have some kind of exemption, and that is what has happened. And there's so many more examples of that. I hope you'll come back on my podcast at some point in the future and opine again, and maybe I'll get you telling stories. You know more stories than almost anyone I've ever met, and I met a lot of people. And so thank you for being with me on my podcast today, and thank you to my listeners for tuning in, and just encourage you to share this with someone that you think would be interested about our conversation today with Doug Weed. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.